This is Greater LA, KCRW's show that connects you to the people and the places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiatakis, and off now we go to downtown Los Angeles. To a handsome 12-story tall building constructed way back in 1923 across the street from Pershing Square. For decades, it was home to offices and upscale department stores. Then business withered, and the building declined as fewer people chose to shop downtown and LA's suburbs boomed. Then, in 2004, a developer purchased that building and turned it into an upscale loft condominium complex, complete with gym and rooftop pool. And in one of those condos, KCRW's Saul Gonzalez met residents Sarah Hernandez and Keith Mariano.
Sarah?
How are you?
Saul?
Sarah?
Thanks for having me.
This is my husband, Keith.
Hi. Hi, Keith. Hi. Lovely place.
Thank you.
Its exposed brick walls, concrete floors, stainless steel appliances, and practical yet tasteful furniture, Sarah and Keith's loft looks like you've stepped into an Instagram feed about design and decor.
Open floor plan and a fantastic view of Pershing Square.
Yes, that's the best part about it. You have amazing views of Pershing Square. You can sit up on this perch and watch the Women's March and every other sort of activist.
Big civic happening that
happens
in the city.
Yeah, exactly. Good, bad, and the ugly, you know, all takes place down there.
Sarah and Keith settled downtown soon after they started dating. Sarah, in particular, was eager to have a life with big city flavor.
I grew up in Salinas, California, which is a small farm worker town on the Central Coast. And so, I joke about this. I'd like to say that, you know, 18 years of living in the middle of lettuce fields kind of makes you want to live in an urban environment.
10 years ago, Sarah and Keith were downtown pioneers, willing to move into a part of a city where lots of people work, but relatively few people lived. But in the decades since, lots of other people have followed, turning downtown into one of the hottest residential real estate markets in the nation. It's estimated that more than 75,000 people now call downtown Los Angeles home, nearly triple the number compared to 20 years ago. And more people means more downtown amenities, stores and restaurants, bars, and here's a very important thing, supermarkets.
Oh, Ralph's was like life-changing for people that live down here. I mean, because that was the first real grocery store. And then obviously now we have Whole Foods and we have a number of different options.
And who are the folks that have moved downtown? Well, Sarah and Keith are both lawyers. And they say the people that they increasingly pass on sidewalks are kind of like them.
You know, it was totally a different population of folks that were here 10 years ago than there are now. You see a lot more professionals now, a lot more people in scrubs, you know, people with briefcases that look like they're practicing law somewhere.
Sarah says she and Keith are committed to putting in even deeper roots downtown. They recently helped form a residence group called DTLA Strong. Now, that group wants City Hall to pay attention to what Central City's new residents want, like police officers patrolling on foot instead of in their cars.
For so long, I think politicians have thought that there's really not a lot of people living downtown, which translates into there's not a lot of votes downtown, which translates into we don't really need to do that much for downtown besides serve the business community. And so DTLA Strong is kind of an effort to correct that and create this critical mass with residents around issues that we feel are really important.
And as Sarah and Keith organize residents, they have even bigger news in their lives.
Well, we're expecting our first downtown baby. Yeah, we're expecting our first baby boy in August, which is really exciting.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Today on Greater LA, why tens of thousands of people like Sarah and Keith moved downtown. How did they find places to live in a district full of empty office buildings? And who's profiting from all these changes? Who's left out? Saul Gonzalez picks it up from here.
Where are we going? Are we crossing the street?
I want to show you the,
Oh, you want to show me this?
I'm walking through LA's historic core with architect Karen Liljegren, and she's talking about the way downtown used to be before its boom.
Walking down this street 20 years ago, you would not see anyone. I mean, no one, not even homeless. There would be some city agencies that were in some of the upper floors of buildings, but most of the buildings were empty.
Now the sidewalks are packed, and all around us there's new construction and redevelopment and pricey third-wave coffee houses on seemingly every block. So, how did an urban ghost town become so hip and happening and so full of residents? Well, one big spark was a law passed 20 years ago this year by LA City Council. It was called the Adaptive Reuse Ordinance.
This ordinance has really changed downtown LA in really good ways.
That's Linda Dishman, the president of the Los Angeles Conservancy. It's the organization that fights to preserve LA's historic buildings and neighborhoods. And that's why she likes adaptive reuse so much. It makes it easier
to convert existing historic buildings into new uses.
Because of the ordinance, office buildings and stores that were once decaying could be turned into apartments or condos without meeting the modern-day building and zoning codes. Again, architect Karen Liljegren.
Having a policy which incentivized development, that really made a huge difference.
Really? I mean, yeah. You can't overemphasize that policy.
Yeah, it was huge.
And can you make a connection between that happening and everything we see around us now? All these boutiques and restaurants and beautiful people.
Yes, because it filled up all the buildings that were empty before with people living in them, which activates a community.
In her office, the LA Conservancy's Linda Dishman says the Adaptive Reuse Ordinance's lasting effect is most noticeable in the evenings when she sees people coming home to downtown and not leaving it.
Our offices are located downtown. We're in the PacMutual building. And, you know, from my office, I can see the lights go on in buildings at night when people come home from work. And for years, they were dark. And so to see lights in the buildings is very exciting to me.
The ordinance also created a cottage industry of developers, investors, and architects whose bread and butter is redeveloping historic downtown properties. That includes Karen and her colleagues at Omgivney, her architectural firm.
We've been involved in over 400 buildings in downtown.
400?
400. Some might be, like redoing a cafe, doing a cafe that's very small. Some might be a million square foot building.
So there must not be a block of this part of LA that doesn't have your fingerprints on it to a degree.
No, I never thought about it that way, but nope.
Right? I mean, no, but you could like walk around or drive around and think, oh yeah, I had something to do with that.
I feel like I have all the floor plans mapped in my head. I could literally draw a floor plan of what so many of the buildings look like inside.
But as downtown LA becomes more and more of a destination, who gets left out? After all, even as more haves arrive downtown, there are plenty of have-nots here. The homeless, people living in single residency occupancy hotels, and small merchants trying to hang on in the face of rising rents. As we walk down Broadway, I talk with Karen about this.
So there's definitely gentrification happening in different parts of Los Angeles, but I feel pretty strongly that it hasn't been a part of these historic areas of downtown.
How so?
Because when you have blocks that are completely empty, you're not kicking anyone out. You're not displacing people, because that's what gentrification is. You're displacing people that have been in a certain place for a long time. And sure, there might be like little pieces of it, but for the most part, I would say 90% of the buildings we've worked on have been empty.
What about the argument that you may not be kicking people out of where they're living, but it creates a kind of ecosystem, an economic ecosystem, when you bring back a building, likely what's rented there, what's sold there in the stores, it's going to be pretty high end. And it's not going to be accessible to a lot of people just because of cost. Is that an issue? Is that fair to bring up?
I think that's fair to bring up. And again, it all has to do with the cost, because if the cost to buy the building and or the cost to renovate the building are so high, you have to charge higher prices to pay those costs.
Right.
Right. So who do you blame? So I look at it more as passing the baton, you know, or evolution as opposed to gentrification. These are amazing buildings, and it is meant to evolve.
Sarah Hernandez and her husband Keith are downtown pioneers, say they feel sticker shock all the time now as they see things get more expensive downtown. They also say they're keenly aware of people who might be rubbed the wrong way by all the changes.
There's always going to be people in your community that really aren't able to step into their neighbor's shoes and really see it from a different angle. And so it's trying to kind of counter that with the which oftentimes is kind of like the silent majority of rational minds in a community that really understand that what makes this community so awesome is that diversity, and we need to figure out how to maintain it. And so that's hard. That's hard because it's emotional for people when people feel like they, you know, a sense of getting pushed out or that they don't belong. And many times that's not necessarily you're getting pushed out. It's just that there's more people that may be a little different from you that are moving into the neighborhood.
Developers say that despite all the work that's happened downtown, there are still plenty of old and historic properties left that they can turn into homes and commercial space. And officials have transplanted the adaptive reuse ordinance that sparked the downtown boom to other neighborhoods in L.A., like the Figueroa Corridor south of downtown and Hollywood. For KCRW, I'm Saul Gonzalez.
John Rigardi is editor at the Los Angeles Downtown News, and he's been watching the evolution of downtown for more than two decades, and he joins me right now. Hi, John.
Hi, Steve.
So for someone who's been so close to this transformation right there, give us a sense of what it's been like. I mean, it happened really fast.
It has, and it's literally been the difference between, you know, night and day, because in the past, no one went to downtown at night. Now, as you know, this area is alive. It's vibrant all throughout the community. Places that nobody ever walked after 5 p.m. when the office doors would roll up, now it's alive. It's filled.
Has that always been the case, though? I think of old neighborhoods like Bunker Hill that were torn down to make way for these new shiny skyscrapers. It was a neighborhood of homes at one time.
Absolutely. But that was, you know, decades and decades ago. And in particular, after, you know, so many people had migrated, out of the downtown area, the historic core, that was really what fell apart until you had the adaptive reuse ordinance and people started returning. You know, the numbers I've heard is that you've gone from about 18,000 full-time residents around the turn of the century to more than 75,000 now. And you see that throughout the area, all different neighborhoods from the historic core to Bunker Hill to the Arts District, which is utterly jammed sometimes on weekend afternoons now, which was never the case before.
I want to allude to what the architect in Saul's story mentioned to us, that this wasn't a classic case of gentrification, that, you know, you see a neighborhood like a neighborhood that's thrived and then deteriorated a little bit, then came back. That's not what happened in downtown L.A., is it?
Absolutely. And I think she's completely correct on this. And I think that the term gentrification has been misconstrued a lot in this. So many of these buildings were empty. It's not that people had been forced out of the area. Maybe a bunch of rats or pigeons got forced out as these properties were cleaned up. But, many of them hadn't been used, in decades. Now, if you're looking for a gentrification aspect, there has been a certain component of, you can call it economic gentrification, a business gentrification. Gentrification as the community has altered and as some of the t-shirt shops or gold stores or even Grand Central Market, some of the old vendors have left and been replaced by, other young hipster-oriented restaurants. But in terms of an overall segment of residents forced out and replaced by richer people, that's really not what happened.
So you have all that going on, this economic, as you call it, economic gentrification, and it seems like the downtown is now sort of the confluence of all these different socioeconomic variables, right? You've got homeless people on Skid Row that really Skid Row has gotten even bigger, has spread out to other streets as well nearby. But then you have all these businesses that are there. Then you have all these people who are living there. I mean, I can see that maybe could be a problem.
You're correct, Steve, and it's absolutely a problem because we have too many people at the polls. One thing that Downtown News has written about the need for multiple times in the editorial page and other places is more of what I guess you could call workforce housing, mid-level residences that you're administrative assistants can afford, the teachers, heck, that your journalists can afford. Too many of the places now, as you said, are either for very low-income individuals or places that you've got to pay $4 a square foot a month to rent or $800, $900, to buy. And it's ultimately not good for downtown Los Angeles, I don't think, to have, this lack of diversity, whether it's economic, ethnic, some other such. Unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be any real push to alter that. Every time these new expensive housing projects open, they pretty much fill up. So the developers don't have a need yet to change the status quo.
A lot of folks who live downtown in that area are concerned about safety. They want more of a police presence. Do you think, is that concern an impediment to the continuing growth of the area?
Safety is absolutely a concern, and in this regard, I don't think it separates downtown from any other community, whether the Valley, Northeast LA, Santa Monica. People want to feel safe wherever they are. Now, what's been interesting here is that, organizations like DTLA Strong have been very effective at, banging the drum, demanding more footbeat officers in downtown. They had a petition that, I think more than 1,700 people signed. They got dozens of people to testify in city council at budget hearings about the needs for it. There's absolutely a lot of concern. And look, some of it's real. Crime has risen for several years in a row. The number of car break-ins is utterly unprecedented. It's skyrocketed in downtown. But then you will also get other people say, well, the counter to that is you're having more crime because there's more people who are living here than ever. More people means more potential victims. And some of those victims are dumb and leave valuables, in sight in the backseats of their car so they get broken into.
And we heard from Sarah Hernandez in Saul's story about how she moved with her husband about a decade ago. She's now pregnant. One of the issues in your paper, the Downtown News recently editorialized about the lack of schools. Like, that kid's going to have to go to school somewhere if they live downtown.
Steve, I think this is a huge problem and one that's receiving very little attention. There simply are not the type of high quality, either LAUSD or charter schools that are walkable within the central city that this new batch of downtowners is going to want to send their kids to. Now, yes, there certainly are some options. There is a 9th Street school sort of in the Skid Row area. The organization Para Los Niños has a couple very, good charter schools. But again, what we're talking about is a place that the people who are, again, paying all this money to rent or own a building are going to want to send their kids to and can either walk to or get on a dash bus to. There was a highly acclaimed school in downtown, Metro Charter Elementary. It opened in 2013, but at the beginning of the last school year, it was forced out. It's now in Lincoln Heights. The brass of the school had desperately tried to find a permanent location, but was stymied again and again because people who they wanted to rent or buy from would want to save the space for someone that could pay a lot more. So you have a real situation where if there is not this applicable, high-quality educational choice, young parents are going to leave the community. We had that editorial in Downtown News this week. One of the first comments on the website was from someone who said, yes, our family left downtown because there were not sufficient elementary school options for our children.
I talked to a lot of people who will tell me downtown LA, as explosive in growth that it is no New York. Do you think that's, encouraging or discouraging, or do you think it will ever be like that in the coming years and decades?
I don't think it'll ever be, and I think that's great. It doesn't need to be New York. New York is wonderful. Let New York be New York. Los Angeles is totally different. It will have its own evolution, its own growth. And I think what's fascinating here is we don't know fully where that's going. We are seeing the rebirth of an urban center, but downtown LA is still in the middle of its rebirth. There's a tendency to look at it and go, oh, look what it is. Look at all these problems. But in this, new evolution, we're 20 years in. It's so remarkably different than it was, in 1999. And it's going to look vastly different in 2039. This story is being written. It won't be New York. It won't be any other international city. It will be Los Angeles, whatever that ultimately is.
John Rigardi, editor over at Los Angeles Downtown News. John, as always, thanks for the time.
Thank you, Steve. Downtown, just listen to the music on the traffic in the city. Linger on the sidewalk where the neon signs are pretty. How can you lose?
Oh, Petula. We're building a better radio station with your support, and KCRW's Summer Solstice Challenge Grant continues with an opportunity today to double your supports of KCRW with a $35,000 challenge grant thanks to our generous board members, Julia Wang and Akio Tagawa. Join or renew or make an additional gift by this Sunday to help us reach this ambitious $35,000 goal. It is so important, keeps programs such as Greater LA on the air and stronger. KCRW.com/join, and thank you for your support. Well, coming up on the program, a giant record store lifts the needle and looks for its next spin. You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW.
Yeah. Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
You're back with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Hey, let's take a trip to Hollywood and put on a record.
La 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 la. Cha 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 cha.
Oh yeah, that's nice. If you've ever passed Sunset and Cahuenga, then you've probably noticed a big two-story white building peppered with neon and splashy graphics, illuminated bars of music and notes. And inside are thousands upon thousands of albums and DVDs and T-shirts and posters and the like. But the giant warehousey record store called Amoeba is leaving its current location with a destination unknown, at least for now. The LA City Council voted to approve zoning changes to allow a high-rise to go up at that site, meaning customer Kaylee Long will have to find another place to buy her records.
That's so sad. I mean, we study musical theater in school, so music is very big to me and to us and to, I feel like, a lot of the people around here, because you need this. You need this outlet.
That's Kaylee speaking to KTLA. So what is next for Amoeba and the future of record and CD stores here in Greater LA? My friend Gary Calamar is a former KCRW DJ, and he wrote the book Record Store Days, From Vinyl to Digital and Back Again. Hey, Gary.
Hey there, Steve. How you doing? Good to be back.
You bet, man. So bring us up to speed with Amoeba. I mean, it actually sold the building to a developer a few years ago, but it's still there.
It is still there and still going strong. I go in there and it's always packed. It's a sad situation, although, you know, we will survive it. They're planning on moving it nearby, which would be great because the current location is a great one on that side of Sunset, you know, near Capitol Records and near a bunch of great studios. You know, it's, the landscape of Los Angeles and Sunset Boulevard is changing all the time, so I guess we shouldn't be all that surprised, but we just hope that it comes back stronger than ever in a new location.
Well, the owners are saying they will move somewhere else. We just don't know where that's going to be.
Well, they did say, what I've read is they said they do plan on keeping it nearby. So let's hope that that is the case, because it would be great to keep it in Hollywood and not have to go, you know, too far out of the center of the entertainment world down there. But and also I hear they're adding a dispensary to it, a marijuana dispensary. So hopefully that will ease the pain for some of the folks.
I was going to ask, because Amoeba, I believe, did apply for a license to sell cannabis, correct?
That's what I've heard, and I understand their locations in the Bay Area. I'm not sure if both of them have dispensaries, but I know at least one of them does. And, I think that would be a nice addition, and especially, I can't really say how sales are going over there. I imagine they're going very well, but it seems like that other business is booming as well these days.
What do people love about Amoeba, do you think, Gary? I mean, in the age of digital streaming, who's going to a record store to buy albums?
Well, vinyl is certainly on the rise these days, so there's a lot of people going out there to buy vinyl, and I think CDs, you know, I mean, obviously things are changing into the digital world, but I still think there's a lot of people that like, you know, physical product. And going into Amoeba, you know, especially Amoeba, I mean, they're sort of the granddaddy of record stores, you know, that I've been to. I haven't been to any store better than Amoeba. It's like a museum to me. It's like you go in there and you see all these amazing posters and these amazing rare records. And, you know, it's just like a beautiful feeling to be in this sort of palace of music with a group full of people who are also thrilled to be in this palace of music. It's a great place for a community and for people to hang out. I mean, virtually every time I go in there, I bump into a friend of, you know, that I've known for a while, and we just talk music.
Do you think it'll be the same when it moves to another physical location?
I think it will. I mean, that remains to be seen, you know, where they're going to move to. But I imagine it will, you know, be the same. It'll take some adjustment to, you know, get to this new location. But I'm hoping it'll be, in some ways, you know, they'll make some additions and it'll be, you know, equally exciting, if not more so.
Gary Calamar, author of the book Record Store Days, From Vinyl to Digital and Back Again. Gary, as always, thanks for your time. Good talking to you.
Good to talk to you as well. Have a great one. See you at the new Amoeba.
That wraps up our song for the day. Tomorrow, how a hike in the minimum wage may mean fewer workers at some places. Coming up next on KCRW, all the president's lawyers. You can listen to us online, kcrw.com/greaterLA, or by podcast wherever you get them. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for the time and for your ear, and we'll do it again tomorrow.